think we're good. Okay, and we have audio. Awesome.
Great.
Welcome. Well, we're going to get going right on time. Hopefully a few more people will filter in, but that'll be perfect. Welcome. So my name is Sarah Cooley. I'm a program manager on the Hyper-V team.
And my name is Tara Raj. I'm a program manager working on the Windows subsystem for Linux.
And today we're here to talk about how to make your Windows dev environment feel like home. And basically, this is going to be all about how to use Linux tools on Windows to make all of your development workflows easier and better. So I have this particularly frustrating experience that happens to me at least once a month, or at least used to, where I'll be really excited about something I read about on the internet, and I will go look up the Get Started guide, and the documentation is all written in a Linux-forward way, where it's like sudo apt-get stuff. And before WSL, that was impossible. Like, we know that you guys need to work across platform, especially web developers and people who are app developers. It's just a reality we live in, whether it's because you have a Windows laptop with a Linux backend, or you want to try something that was documented for Linux. It happens, and we know it happens. So we have a set of tools that give you the flexibility to work with whatever you need to work with, whether it's Windows, Linux, all of the tooling that you need should be integrated into Windows 10 now. And we have a number of different tools depending on what it is that you need to do. So the one that we're going to be talking about most is the Windows subsystem for Linux. It's very exciting. We announced it in Build in 2016, but it's grown a lot since then. We'll talk more about that. And we're also going to talk about virtual machines. So for days when the Windows subsystem for Linux isn't isolated enough or portable enough, we've been putting a pile of time into making great virtual machine experiences. Okay, and quick recap, what is the Windows subsystem for Linux? It is a tool that lets you run Linux tools directly on Windows from the command line. So whether you're mostly a Linux user, but you really like having a Surface, so you maybe want to be able to draw your slides like I do, or you are wanting to switch to a new dev box, but you really want to live mostly in a Linux environment, you can do that. Or whether you're primarily a Windows user, you've used PowerShell, and you enjoy running Windows tools, but every now and then you're like me and you read documentation, you really want to try something, and you want to be able to run apt-get install. WSL lets you do that, so you can, in a bite-sized way, use as much or as little Linux on your Windows machine as you'd like. And as a quick recap of where we've come in the past 2 years, so we announced WSL, which at the time was called Bash on Windows, by the way, so if you've heard the term Bash on Windows, we did some rebranding. But we launched WSL at Build in 2016. And since then, in 2017, we allowed you to install multiple distributions, and a pile of users told us that using bin bash was limiting. So that's when we switched to using WSL, which is the Windows subsystem for Linux. It actually lets the distributions you're running pick which shell you're going to be running as. So we allowed multiple distributions, rebranded to talk about WSL, came out of beta in 2017, so in July 2017, we moved from being a beta feature to being a full-fledged integrated, you can use it, I'm gonna say in production, I still don't mean for production workloads, this is a dev tool, but you can use it in a way that we think is stable and resilient and perfectly acceptable. And we started supporting more complicated tasks. When we first launched, we didn't support things like background tasks or daemons. Those sorts of things work now. So we've come a really long way. And actually, you probably heard this morning, we now have WSL on ARM. So that's going to be coming up in as well. I'm pretty sure that there's actually a session demoing that right after this one. So now we have WSL running on our always connected ARM devices. So we've come a really long way since we first launched. And including WSL on server. So now WSL is everywhere. It's a prime time tool that's really reliable and fast and responsive. And you know, highly recommend you try it out. If you've tried it in the 2016 and you haven't looked at it since, please go back, try it again. It's become a long way. All right, let's use it. So let's flip over to demos. So I find that WSL is one of those things that makes a lot of sense when you see it. So right now I'm running in Ubuntu. If I run, this is Ubuntu. Da-da-da. Hopefully screen fetch, there we go. And this looks exactly like if you were running Ubuntu on the command line. The only difference is when you look at the kernel version, we're running Linux 4.4 Microsoft. So that's because what we're doing is we're picking up all of the syscalls that Linux needs to run, in this case Ubuntu needs to run, and we are using a kernel driver to translate them into something the Windows NT kernel understands. We'll get to that in a bit. But what that means is we're really running full Ubuntu. So if I ls root, you'll see bin, bash, media, home, etsy, everything that you'd expect to see in a Linux root is there. I mean, you are running Linux. This is Linux for all intents and purposes. So I can do something like sudo apt get install, check for typos because node, tab. And what you're going to find is the entire Node ecosystem that you would have running an apt is available in WSL. So this isn't like Linux. It's actually Ubuntu. This is Ubuntu's user mode code running on Windows. And the only real difference is that your syscalls go through a filter so that we can run it without a VM. So there's very low overhead. My other favorite one, let's see, exit. And now I'm in PowerShell. Now I'm in Ubuntu. Now I'm PowerShell. It's that easy. It's really lightweight. It's really easy to move between tools. And so you might be asking, like, OK, Sarah, that's great. But this light, nice thing, like, do we have to pick? Like, is it one or the other? No, you can also run commands in a bite-sized way. So if I want to run mostly in PowerShell, I can do stuff like WSL. I'm sorry, you're going to see a lot of screen fetch because it's a great way of showing that I'm running Linux. So, and this is still PowerShell, so I can run get VM. And WSL, ls, that's going to be my home directory, so some of the folders look funky. But you can run whichever commands you need in a bite-sized fashion, including things like pipe. So command line tools like pipe and redirect work the way that you'd expect. So if I want to, I can run get vm, pipe, grep, WSL, grep. You guys are scary. You'll have to ignore the typos. So now what I'm doing is I'm taking my output from getVM, and I'm piping that raw text over to Ubuntu. And then I'm using the grep command to filter for my Ubuntu VMs. So you can mix and match tools as needed, however you want. And you can do the same thing from WSL. So because I'm a fan of demo parity, so I can run PowerShell.exe. Get VM. And what this is doing is it's actually spinning up a PowerShell prompt, and then it's running get VM and piping all of that text over to WSL, so you can still run your PowerShell commands in line with Linux. So this is if you want to run primarily in Linux, you want to run Ubuntu shell, or you want to run Z shell, or what have you. You can still run those Windows system administration type commands naturally in line as you need from either direction. So pick your favorite flavor. There are a million ways to do development tasks on Windows right now, and we're all about choice and flexibility. This is a great way to run whatever environment you're most comfortable in. So PowerShell, get VM. Let's add to our last command, pipe, grep. So in the spirit of parity, the same thing works in the opposite direction too, where I can also run get VM with PowerShell, pipe it through grep. Do whatever you need to do, you can do that. And let's see, cd, I get to do a little bit of changing directories. Let's see, cd mount c. So one of the other things that we've done recently, so I'm running in Ubuntu right now, I can also do stuff like run vim, and I'm going to make vim test. Let's see. Actually, I need to change it to my notepad directory. C mount C. There we go. So I can do stuff like vim hello world txt. And I have a multi-line file here. So you might have seen this in Scott in the keynote today, Kevin Gallo presented. We actually now support Linux-style newline. So now I can do stuff like run vim, create the text file, work on source, whatever I need to do. And I can run notepad.exe. Thank you. Notepad.exe. Hello world.txt. And we have a multi-line file, yay! And you know it's Linux because I did all of that in Vim. So Now you can like really blur the lines in ways that you couldn't before. It's a really cool subsystem that I find extremely helpful. Okay, so jumping back to slides. Yeah. No, absolutely not. So this is actually a command line executable, so CMD, whatever you need to run. Just run what you want from anywhere, it all works. So yeah, it's super cool. Yeah, right? So now I want to get into a little bit of the architecture, so bear with me. So it's kind of magic. When you see all of these happening, you're like, okay, so I really have all of Ubuntu or Debian or Fedora, whatever you would like. So really, I have all of Ubuntu running in line with PowerShell. Like, how does that work? So what WSL is it's actually a paired set of tools. So these, we have a couple of helper tools like WSL-exe, and we have a kernel driver that basically is the component that takes all of your syscalls and converts them to Windows NT syscalls. If you're an operating systems nerd like me, you might remember that we've had a POSIX subsystem in the NT kernel since the bad old days of Windows. This is very similar. We've rewritten, I hesitate to say all of it, but I think it is actually all of it. So we've rewritten basically the entire POSIX subsystem, but functionally it's very similar. So we're using lighter weight processes called Pico processes, but it's a similar subsystem to that POSIX subsystem. So you might ask, what's changed since then? Why is this so convenient while that never really took off? And the answer is containers. So the similarity, before I keep talking, the similarity to containers basically stops here. But now most Linux distributions have this handy package of user mode code called a container image. So we can take that container image and we can run it as the distro that you were using with WSL. So we're taking essentially the entire user space of Linux distro of choice, and we're running it through this extra POSIX subsystem, if you will. It's called LXCore with our helper tools, WSL-exe. But when we talk about WSL, we're probably talking about the subsystem plus your distro of choice, because it's not as super useful to have just the kernel driver without also having the distro running with it. Ta-da! And so what's actually happening every time you run a Linux command is you're actually opening up a new session. So when you run session, we have our own custom init. This is not Linux init. So this is actually a little helper function that we added. It does binary formatting. It also injects some helper tools like WSLenv, which is a shared list of environment variables. We'll talk more about this later. WSLconfig, WSLpath. And it starts this new session and basically tells Ubuntu how to connect back down to the NT kernel and the subsystem. So these tasks, I find this really cool. I'm not going to switch over for your convenience, but you can actually view all of the commands that you're running in WSL and Task Manager. So if you want to be able to do process analytics and you want to have some insight into what's running and where resources are going, all of these are first-class citizens in Event View or in Procmon. So we've done the work to make sure that you can view all of these things that Linux is doing right in line with the way that you would analyze Windows processes as well. So they all have process IDs, you can track them. You can see them in Task Manager. They're very, very transparent to the operating system. Yay. So how'd you get started? Let's go back. So we just talked about how WSL is really two components. There's a pile of the helper stuff that we've included, the kernel driver that we were talking about, and also some of those helper features. You install those by Control-C. Clear. Actually, jump over to PowerShell. It's already there. So you have to start using WSL in two steps. So the first step is you enable this optional feature that gives you the kernel mode components that you need to translate syscalls. But once you've enabled that optional feature, and this will require a restart if you don't already have it enabled like I do, once you've enabled this optional feature, you just have that kernel mode code and also your helper driver. So the next step is to go and pick your favorite distribution. And where's my store? Store, okay. And this is to me, this is magic. So when we first launched, the only distribution we supported was Ubuntu. So thank you to the people at Canonical. We have some of them here today, actually. So if you want to talk about what it's like being a distribution in the store, you should go find these two orange-shirted people. But when we first launched, we had Canonical in the store. And as other Linux distributions saw how well WSL works, so it actually really is Linux, it actually is your your distribution running on a subsystem. We've had different distributions on board. So SUSE was next, and the enterprise version of SUSE, SLES, came on board pretty quickly. And just recently, we've actually had Debian and Kali Linux join the assortment of distributions in the store. So you can pick whichever distribution you prefer. I grew up using Ubuntu, so I'm always going to be doing demos in Ubuntu. But you have choice. So you might be asking, OK, so if I have multiple distributions, how do I run and manage them? So if I switch back to demos, yeah, awesome.
Whoops, sorry.
No worries. Cool. So if I switch back to demos, if you want to run a specific distribution, you can also do that. So if I want to run Debian, I can, oh, I'm already running. We've given you new and exciting ways to forget which command prompt you're running on, so I can't launch Debian from Ubuntu. Debian. So if I want to, I can launch Debian. Now I'm running in Debian. Really? Oh, OK. Apparently, I haven't installed ScreenFetch. That is very surprising. Well, now you know it's not Ubuntu because I don't have ScreenFetch installed. So I can launch Ubuntu specifically. I can launch Debian specifically. If I were running Kali, I could launch Kali specifically. And these ones have somewhat different command line parameters. So if I want to check out which things are available per distro, you can check out all of the command line parameters per distro, as you would expect for other Windows tasks. So you can ask for more info. And we have a couple of helper tools, and we'll go into this in depth in a second. So I'm just going to show this to you, and then I'll show you how it works without doing the full demo. In order to be able to do multi-distro management, in the last release, we introduced a tool called WSLconfig. And WSLconfig gives you the ability to list the distributions that are available. Let's go back to PowerPoint. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. So subsystem, optional component, distro. If you install a second distro, now you have two distros running, and I showed you how you can launch them independently. So what WSLconfig does is it gives you the ability to list your multiple distros. So you can run WSLconfig-L, see a list, super handy. And you can also change your default distro. So you guys have been watching me type WSL a lot, like WSLexe, WSL run, and a command, WSL to launch Ubuntu. What that is it's running those commands against my default distro. So this is going to be the first Linux distro that you install. So for me, the first one was Ubuntu. It's my default. You can change it. So you can switch to Debian or Kali or whichever other distribution you prefer. It doesn't need to be the first one you install. You can change all of that if you want to. And people often ask me, like, OK, so why would you program against WSL rather than using Ubuntu run or a more distro-specific command? That's because if you're writing a script and somebody has WSL and you have a dependency on a Linux tool, most Linux distributions are going to have common tools like grep. So if you want to have a script that's very distribution specific, you can use Ubuntu run and you can require, so you can actually build all of this into scripts. That's cool in and of itself. But you can specifically call out Ubuntu, Debian, Kali, et cetera. Or you can use WSL grep, for example, and now anybody who has any distribution that has these common sets of tools can go ahead and use that. Works great. So that's kind of why I would use a default distribution with WSL rather than specifically the distribution name. You can also unregister. It's a good way to get a clean install. This does not delete the bits from your computer, but it does clean out whatever you've installed on the distribution. Don't do this. If you will lose data. If you unregister, we do completely clean out all of the things that you have ever installed. So the next time you run Ubuntu or you run Debian, we're actually going to reinstall that for you. So those will be clean, up-to-date bits. It'll be whatever is most recent in the store. So don't do that unless you really do want to actually have a clean environment, but you can. And the next time you run, we'll re-register for you. So now you have a completely clean distribution. Sweet. And I actually already showed you some of these things. But the one that I find really fun, if you want to, you can actually specifically run tools from each distribution. Did I actually install? Let's find out. Oh, sorry. Command line args. OK, cool. So you can do stuff like, you know. So now what's happening is I'm creating a session in Debian, and I'm getting Fortune. I'm taking the text out of Fortune, and I'm piping it over to Ubuntu, starting a new session, launching Kausei, and taking that text and making my Kausei the Fortune. So you can actually mix and match different things. And if you wanted to put that in a script, I mean, probably not Fortune and Kausei, but you know, if you had distribution-specific things, or you had tools in one and not the other, or whatever, you can mix and match at will. So I'm giving kind of silly examples because it's easy to show and it gets the point across. But really, we're living in a world where Windows now has not just a few, but like a plethora of Linux tools available. And I really want to see what you guys wind up building on these things. So I'm really excited about the world we live in now with WSL. So let's, yeah, flip back. Yay. And now I'm going to hand it over to Tara, who's going to show you more practical applications for WSL, so how you can use these things embedded in your developer tools. Yeah. So the question was, can you persist the session? And oh, by the way, asking questions in line, I might keep them to the end. But on the other hand, if it's stuff, feel free to ask, and we'll decide as we go. So yes, you can now persist sessions. It has to be something that you explicitly chose to persist. So if you are running something like tmux or screen, absolutely, when you close the session, we'll keep a handle open to that process. So we will not get rid of tmux and screen and other backgrounded tasks anymore. They will continue to run. However, a good pattern, things like daemons, we will actually close down and clean up daemons. They don't auto start. You don't have those types of system integrations. And really, that is because we don't know the right way to merge running something like an app versus something like a system. So I'm really interested in your feedback there. You know, like, what would your expected behavior be? We're a little bit worried about the world where we run init for a full distribution, like a full operating system, on top of our own operating system. It seems like a great way to confuse people, honestly. But I'm really interested in feedback there. So if you want to talk more about when we make decisions like init and systemd, I'd love to do that. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Oh, God, I hope not. So the question was, with WSL, is there a reason for Cygwin? So to have a Linux tool run on Cygwin, you actually have to recompile it to run with Cygwin, which means the thing I find so valuable about WSL is you're running really true user mode bits from a distribution. They're going to be up to date. They're going to be what people are running in production. Like, that's the newest, latest, greatest available in the world, whereas for Cygwin, it's always going to be a slightly behind recompiled version. So from my perspective with this, there is absolutely no reason to run Cygwin. For that, mainly that reason. It's going to be much more up to date, and it's going to feel much more integrated. Yeah, you can run XServer and connect it to this. You'll have to set your display. So the question was, can you run XServer? You can. We haven't figured out what our relationship should be with having graphical output. This is mostly a developer tool meant as a runtime for your things. Tara's going to talk to you all about that, yep. But you could. Yeah.
And also to mention, Sarah and I will be at the command line booth after the talk, so if you have additional questions about what we're talking about and we might not have time to get to them in our talk, feel free to stop by. We'll be there until like 6:37. So now I want to talk to you a little bit about integrations in Windows. And specifically, this is really interesting with WSL because this is deliberately meant to not be a contained environment. We want you to be able to work between WSL and your Windows file system. And so I'm going to talk to you today about three relatively new integrations we have: Notepad, File Explorer, as well as some goodness in VS Code. So the first of which is Notepad. You probably heard this morning and 5 minutes ago that Notepad now supports Linux line endings. So this was made possible by some of the internals that we have in WSL. And one thing I want to mention here with Notepad is that if you're using this with Linux line endings, be sure to have the status bar enabled. And so the part here that's circled, it basically says Linux LF, showing that we do indeed have Linux line endings in this file that we're looking at. The next of which is launching WSL from the File Explorer. This was one of our top asks from you guys on User Voice, to basically be able to right-click a file in File Explorer and open Bash from here. And so I'm excited to say that in the next Insiders build, we're rolling out exactly that, where you can go into File Explorer, whatever environment you might be working in, if you have a specific developer folder that you want to launch, You can go right there, shift right click, it says open Linux shell from here, and that will open your default WSL distro. So as we mentioned before, you can have multiple distros running. This specifically launches your default distro. And you can change that default or what this launches if you would like to in the configuration of it. So the third thing is WSL and VS Code. So we know that you would be using this as a developer runtime tool. And so we're working to integrate this into your favorite developer tools. VS Code, very popular text editor. So I'm going to show you a demo now that basically will walk you through running a simple Node application with VS Code and debugging that in VS Code, as well as an additional integration we have into the VS Code terminal. So jumping over to our demo machine over here, the first thing I want to point out is that I've gone ahead and gone into my MyApp directory. MyApp is the name of my pretty simple Node application. And what we can do from here is actually say code dot. There's a script that runs in VS Code that allows me to open up my app directly in VS Code. And this is the Windows version of VS Code that's on the Windows side of my machine. So I have my app opened up. And this is a pretty simple web application. I essentially have an if-else statement that says to print out a web page if I'm running the Windows version, different web page if I'm running the Linux version of Node. And that's where this process platform variable comes in. This platform variable essentially tells us which operating system that we're running. So let's start off by going to the debugger and running the Windows version of this application. So I go ahead, I have the debugger running, and the thing to note here is this node executable. That means I'm running the node version, which is running in Windows. So it's actually the Windows version of Node. So if I go here into my browser, and now into my local host, we can see Hello World from Win32. And so that's the Windows version of it. But let's say I have a Linux VM running in Azure, and I want to develop locally to basically emulate the environment that I have in production, which is this Linux VM. The way in which you can do that is by running that against WSL. So with Node, this is a pretty easy configuration. Basically, what you need to do is go into your launch JSON file, which essentially tells you what your debugger target is going to be. So we've had our very nice Node contributors add a flag to VS Code that allows you to target WSL as your environment. And that's what this use WSL true flag does. It essentially targets WSL as our debugger environment. So now when we go in and debug this application, you'll see a slight difference. And the difference here is that we have bash.exe. So that shows that we're actually targeting WSL in the debugger right now. It's as simple as that, just adding that flag into your debugger configuration. So now when we go into our Node application and refresh it, we see that we're running from the Linux version of Node.
Yay!
Now with that, it doesn't end there. So this is just for Node and WSL. We have other contributors who, after seeing that you could do this in Node, are working to see if they can get this running in Python and Go and Ruby and other languages. So the way in which VS Code is architected, this does require a flag for each of these languages. It's not necessarily the most scalable. We're working on that as well. And the last thing I wanted to point out in VS Code is that you can actually launch this application from the integrated terminal. So here, notice that my terminal is Bash. The way in which you can change the setting is you go Control-Shift-P to open up your command palette, and you type in terminal select default shell. And so there we see I have four options. If you have WSL enabled on your machine, this will actually show up as an option for you, WSL bash. And so then we can select that. It'll give me Bash as my default integrated terminal. And so actually it goes and goes into my regular directory that I opened up VS Code in. So this is my app directory. And now I can even launch the application directly from my integrated terminal. So now I'm listening on this port. If I refresh the application, we see that I'm still running Linux, the Linux version of Node. And so flipping back to our presentation here, that's basically some of the big integrations that we've had with WSL, and we plan to come up with more in the future. Now I'd like to talk to you a little bit about some of the platform tools we have. So Sarah basically talked about the fundamentals of WSL. Now we're talking about some of the more advanced things we've recently started to build. We have integrations, we have platform tools, and we have OSS tools. So a couple of platform tools that we have, the first of which is a path tool. So you're probably thinking that, hey, I'm using WSL. We can get confused sometimes between PowerShell and WSL and the way in which we're moving between Windows and Linux. So we created this path tool that automatically goes and converts the paths for you. So you have your slashes facing in the right direction, and you don't really even have to think twice about it. The second tool of which is the WSL ENV environment variable. So this helps with your interop between Windows and Linux, and you can specify various variables that you would like to move across systems with you, as well as whether you want to share these environment variables. So your Node environment variable, for example, or if you use Ruby or Python, it's very common to have environment variables. So essentially the WSL ENV environment variable lets you pass them between Windows and WSL. We can also communicate now on a fundamental level between Windows and Linux processes. And this is through AF Unix support. And essentially, I'm going to go into an architecture diagram in a second, but this basically will allow developers to create applications that are a mix between Linux and Windows. So this was very recently released. This was in the past month or so in an insider's build. And we're really excited to see what developers are going to do with this. So let's jump a little bit into the architecture we have here. So since the dawn of time, Linux applications have essentially communicated through AF Unix sockets. And that's the family space that they've used for this communication. A couple months ago, in an insider's build, we released the ability for Windows applications to communicate through AF Unix sockets. Now, the really fun part here is both these sides can communicate through AF Unix sockets. We've talked a little bit about interop between the Windows side and your Linux side. So what we can do is actually communicate between applications on the Windows and the Linux side through AF Unix sockets. So if an application goes and implements an AF Unix socket way of communicating, we can actually now have these mixed applications. So if VS Code, for example, were to do this, we wouldn't have to have that use WSL flag for every single language. We could just have it on a fundamental level and be able to use WSL just automatically. The system would be detected, and you wouldn't need specific per language support. And that translates over to other applications. So this is super exciting. We want to see what you guys build with this. Please go forth, build on top of AF Unix, tell us what you do with it. Feedback as usual. In addition to that, we're pretty well in the open source community. And so we know that the Linux community, you guys love your open source tools. So we're out here trying to put as many tools as we can into the open to see what you guys do with them and how you build on top of it. So we have a few different tools to share today, and these also are very recent open source initiatives. The first of which is to be able to build your own distribution. So earlier today, you saw 5 distributions in the Windows Store, but perhaps your favorite distribution is not in the store, or you want to have your own flavor of Linux that you custom built. This tool, the distro launcher, allows you to essentially do just that. It's basically a template that you can take and put a tarball in, and we have the tool essentially put that in an MSIX file that you can then unpack on your Windows system as you would the distributions from the store. So it basically masks itself as a store application. And so with that, if you are a distro owner or maintainer, you can also submit your distro to the Microsoft Store. You can email us. We'll walk you through the process of getting through the store as well. So this is your best path to going and sideloading a custom distribution. It's all open source. You can fork it, add various distributions. We actually have Alpine that just forked it, and they're working with us to get through the store. The next of which is a way to script your installation of WSL. So essentially, we have three simple steps here. You enable the optional feature, you get the version of your application from the Windows Store, and then you unpack it on your machine. And so this would allow you, if you have a new machine, to be able to take it and install WSL. You can script this install over and over again. Your teams can use it. And this is actually a part of a broader initiative that you might have seen Kevin Gallo mention this morning about Chocolatey and Boxstarter that just went open source. And that's a part of these dev setup scripts. So basically, we have started a partnership with Boxstarter and Chocolatey, where we're working on a set of scripts that you can use as a one-click install for your machine. The first of which is a web developer script, and that's where you can find these WSL installation instructions. And that went live this morning. So changing gears, going to hand it back over to Sarah to talk a little bit about VMs.
OK, you guys, we have 7 minutes and 56 seconds to talk about virtual machines. So I'm going to try and get through as much as I can. I really want to talk to you guys about this. So we know that WSL isn't always the right tool. Like, virtual machines have a lot of great advantages. We know that you need to be able to isolate environments, share them, have state save it, like checkpoints, be able to save clean versions of a dev environment. So VMs really do have a great place in the dev workflow. And traditionally, while we've had Hyper-V available in Windows since, you know, Windows 8, it's never really been a great place for developers. And we understand that, and we want to work on that. So right now, we are busy building a pile of tools that we think will make Hyper-V a much better place for you to do development. So if you want to put your development environment in a VM so that you can save it and move it and send it to Azure, send it to your favorite cloud, we want to make sure that that's possible on Windows 10 and easy. This is going to be a journey. So I'm going to show you the baby steps that we're taking in that direction and the things that we've done and where we are now. But understand that this is going to be an ongoing effort. We've talked about the Windows Insider program. Join it. We need feedback. We love it. We really do use that information to influence what we do going forward. So things that we want VMs to be as we move forward. We want them to be light. We want them to feel app-like and responsive. High DPI, snappable, resizable. All of that should just work. Also, shared clipboard, the ability to get data into and out of your VMs. Like, that should all be easy, and it hasn't been in the past, but we're getting there. We want to have a VM gallery, so we want to make it really easy to grab operating systems that we know that you use commonly. And the one that I think is the most interesting and different from the things that exist right now, we do want to have a great command line experience. Not just a good command line experience for managing your VMs, but a good command line experience into your VMs. So Hyper-V has had PowerShell Direct, which basically is a network-free connection between your Windows VMs and Linux VMs, or Windows VMs and your host. And we're starting to build those types of tools into all VMs, not just PowerShell and Windows VMs. All right, so let's see where we are now. Switching over to, hopefully, my desktop. Yeah, awesome. So the first thing I wanted to share with you, we've actually already made some steps in this direction. So in Creators Update, we launched what we call the Quick Create Gallery. Some of these are my custom images. So Sarah's DevVM image and the Edge image are ones that are only on my machine. This Windows 10 dev environment image is available to all of you right now. If you enable Hyper-V and you open Quick Create, you will see that image. And
I'm really excited to say that this Ubuntu 18.04 LTS image, it's not there for everyone today, but that's mostly because of the reasons. But you should be looking for that image in like days, not weeks. So we will soon have a Ubuntu image in the gallery as well. I'm really excited about that. Other things that we've done, if you've used Hyper-V, we've historically, it's been a little complicated to set up a network. Now we have a default switch. So if you open up the gallery, you pick a VM, and you choose to create the virtual machine, you'll have a default internet connection shared with your host. It's all fairly easy and straightforward to create that initial VM. I don't want to make you guys wait through me downloading a VM, so I'm going to flip over to an already running Ubuntu VM. So if you finish that download, you get something that looks a lot like this. Another thing that I'm really excited about, so now we have a great Ubuntu VM environment, and we have things like smooth mouse transition. So that Kevin Gallo called this out in the keynote this morning, but I wanted to go a little bit deeper. The way that we've had that we have things like shared drives and these great transitions is we've worked with the XRDP team to make it so that we can run an XRDP server in Linux that is comparable to XRDP running on Windows. So all of those things that you get, all of those integrations you get when you remote into a Windows machine graphically, you now have with Linux. And because we worked with XRDP, right now it's limited to Ubuntu because under the hood, this is a dev branch that we've compiled to run on Linux right now. But as that goes upstream, you'll be able to install XRDP on other distributions, and it'll be really easily accessible for you to install and script and use as needed. So that's actually work that will transcend our work with VMs and be useful for anybody doing remoting to Linux in general. So that makes me really happy. But other things, yeah, thank you. Other things that make me really happy. So, you know, I'm a web developer and I'm wanting to install Node on Ubuntu. I go to the internet and I'm going to get some command. So how to install Node? I'll go to actual Node.js. Ubuntu. In the past, it's been really difficult to get data into and out of Linux VMs. Now with the work we've done with XRDP, I can just copy paste. So I'm opening up my terminal, paste, ta-da. And because of that default switch, it's actually all connected to the internet and works the way I'd expect. Again, or not, but that's probably conference. Well, you know, these things happen. But you can copy paste into your VM. And if you want to transfer more data than that, or if you want to have shared source, you can also share your drives the way that you would if you were using XRDP with Windows. So I've mounted my C drive into my Linux VM. This is optional, by the way, for those of you who are like, but security. It's not something that's always true. You can choose to mount your drives into your VMs if you want to, but it's not required. And so here I have a picture of my cat on a mountain dressed up as Ninja Cat. And I can share that into my VM because I can mount that drive and share my data. I'm not going to demo it because I don't have a file open right now that I can copy paste. You can also copy paste files into your VM. So if you want to share your clipboard and copy a text file into your VM, you can paste that in. Works great. So we're already getting to the point where we have a modest set of gallery images, and we have a reasonable graphical experience to both Linux and at least Ubuntu VMs for right now. But the other one that I think is actually really cool and really exciting is we've introduced a command line tool called HVC, which is the Hyper-V command line tool. And HVC lets you do some common VM actions on the command line in a really light responsive way from either CMD or PowerShell, as you'd please. So you can list the VMs, you can get the VM state. But the one I'm most excited, well, there are two I'm most excited about, and it's kind of a tie, but one of my two favorite things is I can run HVC IP and my VM name, and I can get my VM's IP. So if you're a web developer, you have something running in your VM and you want to be able to view it from your host, it's way easier to figure out your VM's IP. And since you're using a NAT switch, that's available and it's easy to map ports through. That's gonna make life a lot easier for people using VMs for development. The other one that I'm really excited about is we released PowerShell Direct for Windows VMs maybe 2 years ago. So it's a network-free connection between your Windows VM and host. Now we also have SSH Now we have SSH Direct. So you can use HVC to create a SSH connection to your Linux VMs, assuming you have SSH Server installed in your VM. You do need SSH. But assuming you have SSH Server running in your VM, you can SSH without using a network between your host and your Linux VM. So I'm going to run my very secure username. So I'm SSHing into my VM using the VM name. So this is without the network. Connecting. And now I'm running in my VM. So if I want to change directories, I'll go to the desktop because that's really easy to see. Vi temp.txt. Yeah. Typing. Hi, stuff. Escape. And what you will see is now I have that temp file on my desktop. So it is actually SSHing in. You can do whatever you're going to do. You can run whatever commands you want to run. And because we're not actually running over a network, if you change firewall settings, you're not going to lose that connection, which is super handy sometimes. So I'm really excited about the work that we're doing in the VM space right now. And I am really excited to see what people start doing with it. All right, back to slides. We have a whole 48 seconds left, so yes. We will be here quickly, so XRDP, Ubuntu, changes will go upstream. SSH Direct, PowerShell Direct, talked about these things. Perfect. Just making sure I covered my bases. Yes, okay. So we're working on this? Yes, other people. Yes, I know that we're playing catch up in some ways, but you know, you have to do that at some point. So right now we're kind of in that stage. So there is a certain amount of USB sharing. You can mount USB drives and plug and play devices to both Windows and Linux VMs with the RDP settings that we have and smart cards and things. The device support is a little iffy. So we're working with the folks in XRDP. If the biggest problem we have is people are running these things and filing bugs, it means people are running it, and I will be thrilled. So please do go try the things. Please file feedback, send me all of the stuff that doesn't work. You know the routine, please fill out evaluations. We're opening up to questions. We do have resources. So one of these slides, oh, okay.
Yep. So it looks like we might be at time, but as I mentioned before, Sarah and I will be at the booth this afternoon. So please come by, ask us your questions. We covered a lot of ground today, so we'll dive in deeper if you have specific questions for us.
I don't know that they kick us out of the room immediately, so.
So we can take questions in the meantime?
They don't kick us out of the room immediately? Perfect.
No?
So if you have any questions,
great.
Yeah.
Can you do demo stuff?
Yes.
Yep.
How does that relate to services on the?
That is a great question. So if you're running a daemon in WSL, you can start the daemon, and as long as you have a session up, it'll keep running. So for example, if you start it in tmux or screen, it'll just keep on running. And I believe that if you close the session, we do keep a handle open to things that were explicitly started. I need to check that.
So it needs to specifically be
started.
A daemon and have been started. It's not just for any process, for that matter. You can also use the Windows Task Scheduler to schedule tasks as well.
Yeah. So if you want to and you want like a startup task, we will absolutely not do start on login or start on machine start. But you can schedule that task, so you can kind of build your own WSL.
Right, they're not init tasks, but you can do that with the Windows Task Scheduler.
And we're thinking deep thoughts about init. So if you have, you know, opinions, please.
Yes.
Yeah. Questions? Yeah.
Couple file system kind of questions.
Awesome. Oh, we have somebody who really does work between the worlds. So the question was, how does WSL support enforce case, and how do you handle spaces and file names, things like that? So we've actually done a pile of work here, so the behavior is very different between Spring Update and Fall Creators Update. We actually have released an insider build where you can set case sensitivity on a per folder level, so you can specify whether a folder is case sensitive or not with NTFS. So Windows can actually be aware of a folder. So if you create a folder with WSL, it's marked as case sensitive, and now Windows and Linux things will all treat it as case sensitive. So anything that you created with WSL is absolutely case sensitive, enforced between both Windows and Linux.
Yeah, so this was updated in the Insiders build about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And as Sarah mentioned, you can go into your Windows folders and see which are case sensitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're working on improving that experience a little bit as well, so that it's more apparent that a folder is case sensitive.
Yeah, and spaces, you just have to put quotes around things a lot.
So are both NTFS or is one JFS?
Nope, it's all NTFS. So WSL, you are running NTFS all the way down, for better or worse. That is how it's, so all FOpens, and so file open, file close, all of those things are running against NTFS. Yeah. And that's actually an interesting point. So permissions, you share both Linux and Windows permissions. So every file have both Windows permissions and Linux permissions, which is kind of funky. So anything in Mount C will be whatever our best guess metadata was based on your Windows ACLs. It's often wrong. Sorry. So your Linux permissions, if you run like ls-la, it'll be like 777 because we're, it's Windows ACLs. So sometimes that causes problems. I'm really interested in feedback because I want to know where people hit those seams. Similarly, if you have a file that's ACLed to be root, Windows administrator, so say you want to modify something in C, you do actually have to launch that session as administrator. Sudo in Linux is not sufficient to have admin in Windows. So we respect file ACLs and permissions in both OSs, so you kind of have double security there. So that's another one. Yeah?
Do you have a way to tell in PowerShell when you launch PowerShell commands? If you do it on VM running Ubuntu, and you launch PowerShell, you install and launch PowerShell, it's going to act differently than if you do it through WSL, because WSL's got all the .NET stuff, whereas this guy doesn't.
That's a great question.
I do not know.
That is a great question off the top of my head. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure, but we have someone from the PowerShell team at our booth this afternoon.
Yes, we are all partying in the same command line booth. So
please do come by.
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah, I let them in. I let the PowerShell people party at the booth. No, they were there first. Any other questions? Otherwise, we will see you at the booth or around. Oh, yeah.
One more.
Sure. Regarding the VM support.
Oh, yes. I knew that would happen. So that's a really tricky question, and it's really in flux right now. So the question was, if I have Hyper-V enabled, I can't run any other hypervisors on my box, which includes VMware, includes VirtualBox. Until today's keynote, it included Xamarin and your Android emulator tools. Under the hood, by the way, we actually support QEMU on Windows now. So QEMU is what's running under Xamarin, so QEMU on Hyper-V. Weird world we live in. So the long story short is no, we still don't support hypervisors side by side. You kind of have two options. The first one is you can run VMware or VirtualBox in a VM. We don't test that thoroughly, but I believe it works, so try it. So you can run these things in a VM with nesting support. The other one is we're busy publishing a pile of APIs at the platform level, and we're working with partners like VirtualBox and like VMware to run on Hyper-V as a hypervisor, because most of the value of running these things isn't actually the hypervisor, it's all of the management, right? So we're working with them to run the hypervisor so we can use it for security and use it for other things, but also run things that you would like to run. But that's a API updating conversation more so than dual hypervisor conversation for security reasons. Yeah, so time, yeah. Cool.
All right, thanks
awesome.
Everyone.
Thank you guys, and please do come and talk to us.